I'm very grateful to all of you for being with us today. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath's temple. Every Sunday we come together. Actually, every morning we come together. But not so many of you show up. But Sunday, so many people come. It is a wonderful meeting together with our extended family. To the extent we develop broader and broader vision and appreciation of who our family is, to that extent, we actually could experience the reality of who we are. Under the misconception that I am, or we are, material bodies only, we have a very small family. And even within those families, there are so many things to disagree about, to fight about, to separate over. Because the bodies are just temporary vehicles for the eternal soul. On the spiritual platform, aham bija pratapita, we understand our relationship with Krishna. Krishna is the mother, the father of every living being. And in that sense, we see the trees, the plants, the insects, the lizards, the birds, the beasts, and even all the varieties of human beings, the varieties of races, religions, psychological mindsets. There is inconceivable, infinite variety among people. And in that sense, even whoever is living in other planets, in other universes, we understand, we appreciate, it is all our family. The association of devotees or sadhu sangam, satsang, is where bodies of people come together to inspire this realization of life. Coming on Sunday, we're coming out of our little houses where sometimes we think I am the proprietor. Usually in a place like Bombay, you're just leasing or renting. But still we think this is my house. But when we come to the Lord's temple, we recognize this is not my house. This is God's house. And everyone that's coming is coming to remind each other, to inspire each other, to recognize that. And to take that precious understanding, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, to our homes, to our offices, on the trains, in the traffic jams, wherever we may go. We remember our connection to the divine, to Krishna. Yes, everyone is part of our family, and therefore love and compassion is the natural outreach of the heart for every living being to those who know Krishna or God. The family of the devotees is very special, very intimate, because we share that realization among ourselves and together out of love for every living being. In a unified way, we try to share that realization with the world. My father of this material body was here for 10 days. He left today. And he had this realization, which is quite incredible for him. A person who worked and struggled his whole life to somehow or other maintain, sustain, and raise a family of 5 people. And he was considered very magnanimous because he extended it to his parents, to his brothers and sisters, which in America that isn't done so much. But coming here, he actually had the experience of a real family beyond just blood relationships, a family of dozens, hundreds, even thousands of people on the spiritual platform. And I can't ever remember seeing him so happy, because he was experiencing that spiritual connection in the family of devotees. And even he said, he hasn't had so much energy and happiness practically as long as he could remember. And in our congregation, on many occasions, somebody very dear in the family passes from this world. The inevitable reality of death comes upon all of us sometime or another. And then that crisis, they gain such a deep appreciation of such a broader, greater family. Family of those who are striving to love Krishna. So coming on Sunday or festivals is very sacred and very important for our spiritual lives. In understanding the family of Vaishnavas, we can really connect to the universal family of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. It's all living beings in all spiritual and all material worlds. That realization beyond theory is actually understood, realized, according to our enthusiasm to serve without material motivations, without selfish ego. Lord Chaitanya prays, Na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam vaja gadisha kamaye mama janamani janamani swari bhavatad bhakti rahoyit kitvai. I do not desire wealth or power, the beauties and charms that the world provides, nor do I want liberation from suffering. Wherever I may take birth, whatever situation I may be in, just bless me that I may serve you unconditionally. To the degree our service attitude is unconditional, to that degree we are liberated. Liberated from these shackles of mundane limitations. And it's the only happiness. Happiness cannot be bought, cannot be achieved by any material acquisition or accomplishment. Happiness is when the love of our heart is awakened through unconditional service. The last couple days, Makara Sankranti has been observed, and across the town at Radharas Bihari Temple in Juhu, it was a wonderful festival. The festival of the installation of Sri Radha Ras Bihari. It is interesting. It didn't come easy. There was a great battle. A non-violent battle that went on for several years. Srila Prabhupada he left Bombay in 1965 with the idea to take the message of Lord Chaitanya across the ocean to the whole world. And nothing came easy for him. His idea in Bombay was to get a free ticket on a cargo ship to America. Came from Vrindavan to Bombay. That's what it was called in those days. He left his beautiful home in Sri Radha Damodar Temple, where he was surrounded by temple bells, the greeting of everyone is Hare Krishna, Radhe Radhe, Jai Sri Radhe. And in those days in Vrindavan, for those of you who were alive then and went there, very quiet forest, very simple, practically no commercial enterprises. It was a place, pilgrimage for those who were very sincere devotees of Krishna. But as far as residence, it was for very, very dedicated people who wanted nothing but loving service and worship of the Supreme Lord. He left there to come to Mumbai. Of course, Mumbai in 1965 was nothing like it is now either. If we go back to 1965, and now when I look at it, I first came to these places in 1971. From an external feature of what you see and what your senses connect with, today, Vrindavan is kind of like what Bombay was in 1965. So you can imagine what Bombay is like now. You don't have to imagine, just walk on the street. And it wasn't that he just went into Sumati Murarji and said, please give me a ticket. And she said, oh, Swamiji, anything for you. She said, no, I refuse. I will not give you a ticket. If I give you passage, you will die. Buried 38 days on the sea. You're 70 years old. When you arrive in New York, it's very cold. You don't know anyone. No one will care about your message. No one will care about you. Srila Prabhupada begged. He sat on the step of her office and wouldn't eat or drink anything until she gave them the ticket. She couldn't even face him. She sent out her secretary to bring him water, to bring him food, to bring him in. He said, not until I get ticket. He wasn't begging for himself. He was begging for all living beings, begging for the chance to serve. And when he came across two oceans, two continents, and arrived in the United States of America, he wanted nothing for himself. He came to give. A person who materially had nothing was giving the highest wealth to people in a country that had more than anybody else in the world, materially. Many of us know the struggle Srila Prabhupada endured, the reversals, the illnesses, heart attacks, strokes, and so many other types of physical ailments, death threats, poverty. He could have come back. But for him it was an honor, it was a privilege to serve his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, in this very special and intimate way. When we are actually Krishna conscious, when there is reversals, when there is difficulties or even sufferings in trying to execute our service, it creates a sense of intimacy in the heart. Because things that are easy are often taken cheaply. And it takes a person who is very sincere, who really wants to express their love, to carry on when there's every reason to quit. And we all have the power to see it this way if we just pray for this vision. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed, and his words are to give us the opportunity to enter into this spirit. When we read the prayers of great personalities, their prayers are not just displaying their own spiritual greatness, but they are opening the door for us to enter into that spiritual greatness. By deeply appreciating these prayers, we have the chance to access that same spirit of selfless devotion. Thakur Bhaktivinoda said, the inconveniences, difficulties, even sufferings that I may endure in serving you, Krishna, are the source of my greatest happiness. Because they do create a sense of deep intimacy. Whatever may happen, Krishna, still I'm doing it for you. It gives us a chance to express higher levels of selfless love. And in that love, Krishna reciprocates. Yegatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. And there's intimacy. When Srila Prabhupada was on Jaladuta, he prayed, let me be your puppet and dance according to how you want me to dance. I am yours. I don't know why you have sent me here. Please empower me to do your will. And after much struggle, an incredible historical manifestation of compassion, where he never complained. He's always grateful for any opportunity to serve. Srila Prabhupada, his enthusiasm was to reach the hearts of every living entity with the matchless gift of pure devotion. But at the same time, he was so grateful, even if one person would receive it. We read in his diary, played a recording that he made explaining the Maha Mantra. And there were just 4 or 5 people that came. Srila Prabhupada was so encouraged, so excited. Four or five people came and they liked the prasad I gave. He was just giving little slices of apples. They liked the prasad, and they liked the chanting, and they seemed to like the message. Now I can understand that the great prophecy of the acharyas, that this movement will spread throughout the world, will take place. Now, for many of us, if 4 or 5 people come, we're not so excited like this. When one semi-crazy person invited Srila Prabhupada to his Bowery loft. Bowery loft is, in the old days in New York City, in the Bowery, there were warehouses where they would bring things in from ships and put them. Even today, you'll see in New York City, there's pulleys and those little wheels where you take ropes, bring things and put them through the window. They'd store things. Just a warehouse. So he was living in a converted warehouse. No walls for rooms, just one big hall. Not very big. Now for any of us, a place like that, in a ghetto, it's not a very prestigious place. And he had no followers. Just one person who said, you could live with me. And Prabhupada had to live with him on his terms. And Srila Prabhupada was writing back to India. We have a temple in America, in New York City. Our Gurudev's dream is being fulfilled. Every little opportunity, he was seeing it in such a positive way. And he was so grateful. And then the person he was living with actually attacked him to kill him for nothing, because he was on some drugs, the person. And Prabhupada had to leave, and he was completely homeless. But he continued. He took every situation as God's grace. Inconceivable. And ultimately, he had some followers and came back to India. In fact, two of those followers are with us today. Shamsundar Prabhu and Yamuna Devi Prabhu. They were among the original devotees who came to India with Srila Prabhupada. And Madhusudan Prabhu and Kanchana Bela. How do you pronounce? I'm sorry. She's sitting there. Please stand up. Is Madhusudan Prabhu here? Please stand up. They first came to Krishna consciousness in 22nd Avenue. Is it 1966? 1967. Two of the original devotees of Srila Prabhupada's mission. So he saw Prabhupada in those days. Both of you come and sit up here, please, now that you're standing up. Mataji, please come. Make a passage for her. Please. Said it right. Arivo. Let us welcome them to Sri Radha Gopinath. Second Avenue, that little storefront. Now it's all modern, decorated and everything. But in those days, it was really a run-down place. And maybe holds about 40, 50 people maximum. That's very crowded. And right next door to a petrol station. And that was the entire International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada registered the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And that was it, that little storefront. And these two great souls lived there. So when Srila Prabhupada came back to India, there was many wonderful opportunities that he saw. And one of those was a dream to build a beautiful temple in Mumbai. And all the devotees were looking for some little piece of land or some little building here in South Bombay. Because in those days, this was Bombay. Juhu was like a distant farmland area. So they were looking, and Prabhupada went and said, I want here, this piece of land. He said that before he came to America, Sumati Maharaji lived there. He used to look at that piece of land. And he had that thought, someday we will have something here. And all the devotees, at least the ones I talked to, they were wondering, why? Who is going to come here? So far away. Srila Prabhupada said, soon this will be very much a center of the city, which it is today. And he lived with the devotees. In very primitive situations, mosquitoes, rats, malaria, and most all the neighbors really hated us, didn't want us around. And Prabhupada brought Radharas Bihari and put them in a tin shed, just a little shed, and that was it. And such a battle, because the person who supposedly sold us that little plot of land, his intention from the beginning was to cheat, take the money, because he sold it to several other people too. And he was a very powerful political figure with tremendous political ties with the media, with the government. He had money. Srila Prabhupada and his followers really had nothing. Prabhupada, he promised the deities, this is for you. And he fought for Krishna. And after many years of reversals that seemed that he was totally defeated, that there was no possibility, physical threats, mafia, dacoits, politicians, government, police were all against. And he just gently worshiped Krishna and wouldn't leave. And ultimately, he started building. And people came to tear it all down. But he kept building. from about 1971 or two until his disappearance from this world. He never gave up. And just before he left us, he understood that everything was secure. And Radharas Bihari had a beautiful temple. It was a beautiful grand opening on Makara Sankranti. Why so many challenges to great people? From a Vaishnav perspective, that's kind of the story of Makara Sankranti. It's the day that Bhishma departed from this world. We read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brother, the Pandavas, they were the very personifications of religion, dharma, and morality. But yet they suffered so much throughout their entire lives. And finally, by Lord Krishna's will, there was the Battle of Kurukshetra. Yudhisthira Maharaj, Arjuna, and Krishna himself, the Supreme Lord, tried every possible means to avoid that conflict. But Duryodhana was so envious, so arrogant, and so immoral, a cheater. He was exploiting for himself. He wouldn't negotiate. So eventually, for the welfare of the whole world, at that time and for all time to come, there was no other alternative. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. As a lesson, that sometimes the greatest blessings of God manifest at the most difficult times of life. Srimad Bhagavad Gita is the very essence, summary study of all the knowledge of the Vedas. The song of God for the ultimate liberation of all living beings. Just like nectar was churned out of the ocean at a time of intense rivalry between the Suras and Asuras, the Bhagavad Gita emerged from this imminent disaster. And in the end of that war, the Pandavas were victorious. And the commander-in-chief of the enemy opposing army, Bhishma, was laying on the battlefield. The greatest, most powerful soldier in the entire world was Bhishma. Why he chose to be on the side of Duryodhana This could be analyzed from many points of view. And he's a Mahajan, a person who loved the Pandavas, who intimately loved Krishna, who was the embodiment of Dharma. Why was he on the other side? Srila Prabhupada cites the great acharyas because he knew it was Krishna's will. Krishna wanted to show the world for all time to come that even the most intelligent, the most powerful, the most skillful person will be defeated. If he takes the side of immorality, it is just a matter of time. Some people wonder, how is it that good people suffer and bad people seem to prosper? But according to the laws of karma, the laws of the world, everything is sorted out in due course of time. The Pandavas spent 12 years in exile with nothing, and before that, practically their whole childhood was being abused, exploited. And Duryodhana, who was envious and selfish and sinful, he was enjoying all the luxuries, the power of being a king. It seems that being bad is really good from a material perspective. Yudhisthira was good and he had nothing. Duryodhana was bad and he had everything. Duryodhana was defeating Yudhisthira materially on every level. And when the war finally came, Duryodhana had Bhishma as his commander-in-chief. Because he knew that if Bhishma is on my side, I cannot be defeated. Bhishma, he loved everyone. He was a great devotee. He loved Duryodhana, but he hated Duryodhana's mentality. And he loved Yudhisthira and loved his mentality. Bhishma, in his heart of hearts, was always on the Pandava's side, in every stage. But why he fought with Duryodhana? Because he just wanted to be Krishna's puppet. Even though for all time to come, most of the world would misunderstand him, he wanted to serve. Krishna wants to use me as a message. However great, however intelligent, however powerful, however wealthy, however skillful, if you are not on the side of Dharma, in due course of time, you will be destroyed. And if you are on the side of Dharma, in due course of time, 100% guaranteed, you will be victorious. Bhishma, by his own will, accepted defeat, but not without a good fight. as a kshatriya, he couldn't give up. He had to fight with all his strength. And no one could defeat him. He personally told the Pandavas how he would be defeated and how he could be defeated while he was still fighting with full strength. And when he told them this secret, he was so happy. He just wanted the Pandavas to be happy. And he wanted Krishna to be happy. So he was laying there. He instructed Arjuna, shoot arrows from my feet to my neck, and there should not be even enough space between arrows to put your finger. And each arrow has to go in the front and come out the back. Now some of us, when we're on yatras, we step on a thorn in our foot. And we think, why is God doing this to me? Just think about Bhishma. And he was laying there. And if you were in that situation, arrows going in through the front, out through the back, hundreds and hundreds of them in your body at the same time, and you're laying there, you would probably want to die. But Bhishma, he had a blessing from his father that he would only die at his own will. So he just laid there for weeks. When he laid down, all the warriors from both sides stopped fighting that day and all came to offer their love and respect to Bhishma. And after the battle, when Yudhisthira was victorious, he was coronated as the king. But he was feeling very, very sad in his heart. Because of me, so many people had died. It wasn't because of him. It was because of Duryodhana. But he put no blame on Duryodhana. He was so humble. So Krishna wanted to pacify him. Krishna also knew that on that lonely battlefield in Kurukshetra, where there was nobody around living, Bhishma was just laying there. Bhishma knew that Krishna would come. Such faith. Krishna said in the Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. I will always protect my devotee. From Bhishma's perspective, that protection, and this is a very important principle, that protection was not that he would win. That protection was that he would be there to save him. Bhishma lost the battle, but won the war. Ultimate victory. Krishna came all the way back to Kurukshetra with the excuse of bringing the Pandavas to hear him speak. When they arrived, and so many, when others heard that Yudhisthira was coming and Krishna was coming, many other great saints and sages arrived to be on the scene to hear Bhishma speak. Can you imagine that class? Sometimes we're sitting on these nice seats and our health is kind of all right and still we're thinking, how difficult to speak. But Bhishma, he was laying in that bed of arrows on the hard, cold ground in Kurukshetra in the winter. This is January. Kurukshetra is extremely cold in the winter. Just waiting. He knew Krishna would come. He wouldn't give up his body until he fixed his mind in the beautiful form of the Lord. And when all these people came, Bhishma wanted to welcome them all. It was kind of like that deserted battlefield after the war was over. It was like his home. And everyone that came, he couldn't stand up. He couldn't even move. But with his head and with his glances and with his heart, he was welcoming everyone that came before him according to his capacity. And this deeply moved everyone's hearts to see how much effort he was making to show his respect and his love. In offering of love, there's no material qualification or disqualification. Whether you're old or invalid or blind, or poor, or rich, or healthy, Krishna sees our intentions, and that's what he receives. Bhishma was lovingly giving hospitality to everyone, especially Krishna. He couldn't stand up to receive him. All he could offer him was his heart. And when he looked at the Pandavas, it just melted his heart. He was thinking, why is it that Yudhishthira had to suffer so much? In his body, his actions, through his words, or even in his thoughts, he never did anything ill toward anyone. Even those who were trying to destroy him and hated him, he was always a well-wisher. He would never tell a lie, even under the most difficult predicaments. He would never harm anyone. He was everyone's well-wisher. He never did anything immoral in his life. Do you know anyone like that? So according to the laws of karma, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. For every action is a corresponding reaction. We understand when people are suffering, they must have done something to cause somebody else suffering. But Bhishma, the Pandavas never did anything. And they suffered maximum. So many tribulations, so many reversals, hardships, injustices. And Kunti Devi, the most chaste, faithful, innocent, pure-hearted lady, she suffered the most to see what her children were going through constantly from their childhood. And there was no break in the plots and the evil exploitations of Duryodhana toward her family. And she was helpless to do anything about it. So Bhishma was thinking, why? And then he explained his realization. No, this was all due to the inconceivable nature of time. Krishna tells us in Gita, I am time. Time is controlled by God. And time is the supreme force within material existence. Everything is under the control of time and everyone. Such a mystical thing. Time will burn the sun out. Time will dry up every ocean. Time will make every mountain, even the Himalayas, covered with ice, into powder. Time will take away the bodies, physically kill everyone. From Lord Brahma to the insignificant ant. And everyone in between. Time is all powerful. And time never takes rest. Yes? Never goes to sleep. Never stops. Even if your clock runs out of batteries, time continues at the same pace. Nothing could stop it. You can't bribe time. You can't seduce it with beautiful temptations of money or beautiful charms. Even the most powerful armies in the universe cannot slow down the advancement of time with all of their artillery. And yet, you cannot see time, can't hear it, can't taste it, can't even smell it. It's invisible. It's the subtle most thing in all of the creation, but supremely powerful. All the great people of history, whoever they may have been, all succumbed to time. And we know for sure. It's going to happen to everyone. This earth planet. Man cannot destroy the earth planet. We could make a mess of it. But we can't destroy it. Only time will destroy it. It will be non-existent. It may take hundreds of millions of years. But from the perspective of time, there's really no difference between hundreds of millions of years, billions of years, or even trillions of years, and a second. Because time is never impatient. Yes? Just gets his work done. Because time has all the time in the world. And beyond. Bhishma is saying, this is the inconceivable power of time, which is ultimately under the control of God. And Bhishma was marveling over Krishna and so much appreciating the Pandavas that throughout whatever they went through, they never gave up their dharma. They never gave up their devotion. They were constantly devoted to the Brahmins, to Dharma, and to the Supreme Lord. And the Srimad Bhagavatam and the great Acharyas, who were all presented to us in Srila Prabhupada's words, explains how Krishna teaches the world through the greatest devotees. There was really no reason for the Pandavas to suffer. But in this material world, whoever you are, whatever you've done, whatever you've not done, there's going to be reversals and suffering. Yes, we could very likely live a much better life if we do good karma rather than bad karma. But you even have to suffer if you do only good karma. Because dukkhalayam ashashvatam, the material world, is like that. Everything's temporary. Abramabhuvanaloka punaravatanojana mamupetya tukonteya punarajanmanavidyate. Krishna tells in the Gita, from Brahma Loka, which is the most pious place for the people with the ultimately best spotless karma, down to the lowest, where the most sinful people reside, Krishna said they're all places of misery. Because material world is a place where everything is temporary. And we see, even the devas with very good karma, they have all kinds of difficulties they have to deal with. Even Lord Brahma. What to speak of us? We're honest. We give in charity. We don't like to hurt people. Why am I suffering? Because that's just the nature of this world. But what is a great person? A great person is not someone who has such good karma that they don't suffer. Prahlad suffered reversals. Great saints, Haridas Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Jesus Christ, Moses, Muhammad, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinod Thakur. When we read the lives of the great personalities, even the Brijabasis, in Krishna's Leela, so many reversals, so many hardships, so many challenges, difficulties, anxieties. Vaikuntha means a place of no anxiety. That means no material anxiety, in the sense that the great souls, in whatever happens within this world, where the inevitable will take place, they turn to God. They turn to Krishna. They never give up their virtues of devotion, their purity of heart, their desire to serve selflessly. And great souls go through so many of the same things that the rest of us do. But Krishna teaches us what is greatness through them. Because in whatever situation, they always remain faithful to the loving service of the Lord. And in the most difficult times or in the easiest times, they gratefully take shelter and chant the holy name.
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
Krishna This was Bhishma's conclusion, that even the greatest thinkers, the sages, enlightened beings, cannot understand completely the inconceivable will of God. That means we cannot understand the details of how and why it's all happening. But Bhishma Dev did understand the principle behind it. And if we understand the principle, we can attain perfection in this in the inconceivable movements of time within this world. And that is, whatever situation, with a grateful heart, to take shelter of the Lord and to do the right thing. Bhishma then gave one of the most incredible classes ever given. It composes many, many chapters of Mahabharata, where he was describing so many subject matters. And in doing so, he completely pacified Yudhisthira Maharaja's heart. And he did it all while laying in that bed of arrows. When he looked upon the beautiful form of Krishna, Param drishtva nivartate, all of his sufferings, all the pains of those arrows going through his body and his living through it. And please understand, inconceivable. He couldn't die unless he decided to die. Those arrows were piercing through his heart, through his liver, through his kidneys, through his pancreas, through his lungs. Not a finger could be put between any of them, even in those organs. No. Who at Bhaktivedanta Hospital that's here could possibly diagnose that? How is he still living for weeks? That was Bhishma's power. He wanted to see Krishna before he left this world. And Krishna knew that in his heart and came all the way to give him darshan. And when Bhishma Dev looked at Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, his loving lotus-like eyes gazing upon Bhishma, that most beautiful smile, which is the origin of all sweetness in all material and spiritual worlds, is Krishna's smile. He smiled upon Bhishma personally. And that wonderful, wonderful form, colored like a tamal tree, standing before Bhishma, gave him so much ecstasy that Param drishtva nivartate, he was experiencing such a wonderful experience, such pleasure in seeing Krishna, that he forgot all the pains of all those arrows going through his body and every organ. And how to speak when you're in that situation. But seeing the beauty of Krishna, appreciating Krishna, he was so grateful. How many of us could be grateful in a situation like that? His gratitude was in appreciating Krishna. Everything Krishna does is always perfect for all of us. And to have faith in that, in every situation, that yes, Krishna's here for me. That is real gratitude. And he spoke for hours and hours and hours. And when he saw the sun entering into the northern hemisphere, the Makara Sankranti, Bhishma understood this is a most auspicious time to give up my life. He stopped speaking and gazed upon Krishna. Then he glorified Krishna. There was nothing else to speak about. He said everything. He was remembering Krishna on the battlefield, covered with ash, covered with the dust of the hooves of the horses and the elephants, charging at him with the wheel of a chariot. He was remembering Krishna as that most beloved Lord who's willing to break his own promise to protect the promise of his devotee, who is always there to protect his devotee, and who had come now to protect Bhishma. How is he going to protect him? Just by being there. God's protection does not mean that he saves our physical life. He may. Saves our wealth. Saves us from a disease. He may. But the real protection is he's there for us at the time of our greatest need. Krishna is not different than his name. He is there for all of us in every situation. He's here to protect us always in his name. The question is, how do we receive that protection? How do we take shelter? Bhishma showed us. After glorifying Krishna in so many ways and showing his love, his appreciation, he remained silent and just fixed his gaze upon that beautiful darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He who spoke so many words, who fought so many battles, who did so many great things, now put 100% of his entire consciousness in offering his love to Krishna. Tears of ecstasy in his eyes. And Krishna reciprocated by gazing upon Bhishma. And in that most perfect state, materially it was the most imperfect state, but spiritually it was the ultimate most perfect state. He willingly gave up his life. Returned into the eternal pastimes of Lord Krishna. And everyone there, they saw that he perfected his life. There was joy and sorrow. Joy that he has achieved the ultimate destination, and sorrow that we will never physically see him again and share his wonderful association together in this life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also left his home to take sannyas on Makara Sankranti. And from this perspective that we are focusing on in today's talk, the same lesson is there. There's no question of Lord Chaitanya doing bad karma. It's a karmic reaction for most of us when people criticize us, when people threaten to destroy us, when people try to undermine us. Om apavitra apavitrova. Anyone who even thinks of the Lord Chaitanya becomes purified. He's all pure, supremely pure. But yet when he was in this world as the most magnificent, magnanimous and merciful of all incarnations, Parama Karuna Pahundui Jana Nitai Gora Chandra, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda were giving prema bhakti in the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan to everyone, anyone. But yet, Brahmins, who are supposed to be the upholders of Dharma, who are supposed to be living by the highest qualities of forgiveness and patience and devotion, they were severely criticizing Lord Chaitanya. They were threatening his life. They were making plans to physically punish him. They were spreading nasty rumors against him. It was getting more and more. And in that situation, the Lord spoke to Nityananda Prabhu and several of his other devotees that I've already given Krishna Prema, love of Krishna, to so many people in Navadvip. But these people who are so envious, antagonistic against me, they won't accept it. I will take sannyas for them. Because when I become a sannyasi, even they will have to offer their respects. And by offering respects, their hearts will open to receive my message. So a time of great difficulty, challenge, even came upon the Lord. And taking sannyas, what that did to the devotees, when he left late at night, at around the time of Makara Sankranti, after having a nice festival of greeting the devotees and giving them garlands and giving them prasad and giving them good instructions. You are all more dear to me than my life, he spoke the night before. Just be together, chant the holy names, and never forget the name of Krishna. Whether you're eating or working, or playing, or walking, or sitting, or laying, whether you're awake or asleep, any situation, whether you're alone or together with your family or together with devotees, whatever you're doing, never forget this most sacred gift of the name of Krishna. Remembering the name of Krishna, we can be in the presence of Krishna. Just like Bhishma was in the presence of Krishna and felt supremely happy while on that bed of arrows. In whatever situation we're in, we can feel supremely happy if we feel Krishna's presence. And Krishna is present in his name if we just learn to take shelter. This was the Lord's message. He was giving garlands to everyone. He was embracing everyone. They were just coming to see him to celebrate this auspicious day. They didn't know that he was going to leave that very night. And he did. It created a very, very big challenge. But for such a high purpose. But apparently it was a great reversal and obstacle. Lord Chaitanya transformed it as an opportunity to give more and more and more people the blessing of love of God. And after he left home, not only the devotees and Sachi Devi and Vishnu Priya were drowning in an ocean of separation from Lord Chaitanya, but even all those who were blasphemous, who hated him, who were threatening him, who were spreading nasty, horrible, lying rumors against him, when he actually left and they could never see him again, that was their thought, even they started crying in separation from Lord Chaitanya. The morning after he left, even all, practically all of those people realized who he was and what they have done. And when he came back to Navadvip, sometime later, all of those people came to him and surrendered their hearts. He didn't have to give lecture to them. All he had to do was leave. And they realized who he was. Makara Sankranti. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His taking sannyas was a very, very incredible pastime that was apparently very much instigated by serious reversals. But it was for the ultimate benefit of the world. A very fitting day for Srila Prabhupada to have his temple inaugurated after the greatest battle in his whole Leela as the Acharya, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Greatest battle was that land here in Bombay. But like Bhishma, he knew that Krishna's with him. And where there is Krishna, there is ultimate victory. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhyashinda namaskuru mame vaishashi satyante prati jani priyoshime. It's Krishna's ultimate benediction. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. It is my promise. Kontiya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. And Arjuna, you promise it too. My devotee will not perish. Because Krishna is there to enliven the soul, to rescue the soul in whatever inconceivable situation time may put before us within this world. Yes, the sun will burn out, the oceans will dry up, the earth planet will disintegrate and disappear. But the soul is eternal. And Krishna's love for the soul is eternal. when we see it from that perspective, there's not really any very serious problems in this world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained the only real problem is forgetting our relationship with Krishna. In this spirit, we come together as a family to help each other to be happy, knowing that Krishna's always with us. There's infinite hope in every situation, always. Don't take the ups and downs of this world so seriously. They come and go for everyone, whoever you are. Yesterday we were in a boat in the Arabian Sea, and I was watching the waves. And it's so much like life. A wave goes up, a wave goes down, a wave appears, a wave disappears. We don't take these things so seriously. We take serious the opportunity. Our eternal relationship with Krishna. As a family, we come together to inspire one another, empower one another, to share this great thing with everyone, everywhere, at all times. That Krishna is here in our hearts, and in his holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Now we would like to ask Madhusudan and Kanchan Bell to speak something. And Nursing Ananda Prabhu, please come also.
Hare Krishna. I'm so happy to see you all. When I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, there was probably 20, 30 devotees in total. Yet, for some reason or other, we all had the faith that this would spread throughout the world. I don't know where that faith came from. But we just thought this, it just seemed like this was the truth. And that it had to spread. Right about that time, I saw a business card that Prabhupada had printed up. It said, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Centers throughout the world. And I couldn't understand where those centers were. I thought maybe something was going on in India, because there was only the New York temple, and he had gone to San Francisco to start that temple. When I came to the temple in New York, he wasn't even there. And yet the message of Krishna consciousness was conveyed. Even those early days, the simple teachings of Bhagavad Gita were attractive. So I've never been a prominent devotee, but I was there for some reason or other in the beginning. And when I see centers like this, devotees like Maharaj, I feel like I played a small part, like I was a little screw in this machine. So it gives me a lot of satisfaction, even though I don't do great service like you all, like Maharaj. I remember when Prabhupada did come, about 3 months after I joined, I had to stay back from the airport to help prepare the feast. So when he came, some devotees came up to get me. We were rolling puris or stuffing samosas. And someone came up to get us. I was there with another devotee. I think it was Purushottam. Neither of us were initiated. And they called us down, and we came into the storefront, paid our obeisances, and were introduced to Srila Prabhupada. And he shook our hands. I didn't know the extent of how significant that was. So we were, at that time, there was morning and evening programs. Morning programs started at 7 a.m. every day, and this was Bhagavatam class. In the evening, Bhagavad Gita 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. After, in the morning, one of the first times I heard him speak, and he would always ask for questions, and I raised my hand, and I asked, I heard that there was an ocean of milk. I said, "Is there really an ocean of milk?" And Prabhupada said, "Come, I will drown you in it." So now I'm drowning. I'm drowning in this ocean. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Krishna, I just have to say I'm also so inspired by being here. We both have wanted to come here for years. Just hearing what Radhanath Maharaj has done, all these beautiful devotees, the deities, and Srila Prabhupada would be so pleased. He really would. Is, and I just feel by Krishna's mercy, somehow or other, I started coming to the temple when it was very small also. Even like 20, 30 people were like a family. I never in my wildest dreams would I conceive that it would be thousands and thousands of devotees all throughout the world. And at that time, I was living at home and following and still going to school. And I remember writing Srila Prabhupada, who was always so kind and compassionate and encouraging. Because in the beginning, there was not the standard of deity worship like there is now. At that time, there was Lord Jagannath deities at the 22nd Avenue Temple. It was actually upstairs in Srila Prabhupada's quarters. And he didn't have clothes. And the devotees ate in front of him, slept, cooked, offered prasadam. And at one point, one of the devotees saw Radha Krishna deities of Srila Prabhupada's. And they were also excited to want to worship them. And Srila Prabhupada said, "If you knew all the rules and regulations, you'd faint." So at that point, I was living at home, and a devotee gave me their Lord Jagannath deities to worship. And at that time, it developed. I was making clothes for them, embroidered outfits for them. And I remember I wasn't initiated yet, but I was following the principles and chanting all my beads, and I thought, oh, I want to get initiated by Srila Prabhupada. So I wrote him a 6-page letter. And I was 16 years old. You know, I just wanted to tell him everything honestly. And at that time, like I was saying, deity worship was not established like it is now. I thought what was very beautiful was moss, cactus, bark, and I'd have it on my, you know, altar for Lord Jagannath. And I told Srila Prabhupada that in a letter. And he wrote back to me, my sincere blessings are to you for your nice prosecution of Krishna consciousness. I see Krishna's dictating from within, and that's why you are doing things so nicely. I mean, he was just so kind. He encouraged so much, even though we were all taking baby steps. He always encouraged. And I remember just sending my beads to Srila Prabhupada, and so there was a fire sacrifice in San Francisco, and we were back in New York, and I got initiated that way. But Prabhupada was so kind. Whatever spark there was, he always just ignited it and made us just go forward. Anyway, thank you. Hare Krishna.
Vanchakalpatrivyascha kripasindhuvyevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnevyo namo namaha. By association with Radhanath Maharaj, I'm again reassociating with my dear friends Madhusudan and Kanchabal Devidasi. And as I sit and I look at this lineage, I remember that in 1971 in New York, in Brooklyn, where I served with these two wonderful devotees, we were at the press, and I was Bhakta Dev at that time. And it was devotees like them that tolerated me in my confusion and my attempt to be of service that allowed me to feel accepted and embraced in the association of devotees there. And we used to take turns at the press, which was some blocks away from the temple, guarding it at night, and we'd sleep on top of the freshly printed covers and pages of Prabhupada's books because it was the warmest place in the entire warehouse. Magically thinking that somehow or another that we would imbibe the meanings of the words just coming up through all the copies. What I'm really beginning to understand is that when Srila Prabhupada extended his mercy to these wonderful devotees, those devotees took that same mercy and extended it to myself and other devotees. And like that, as the example of the mango being handed down from the tree very carefully so that it remains intact and undamaged by the time it gets down to the bottom. Similarly, this is the process of how everything carries forward. It's only by the mercy of the devotees that we become devotees or aspiring devotees. When I look at the beautiful deities, after 40 years of looking, I'm still seeing in my own mind stone and wood, beautiful dresses, lovely expressions, nicely painted. But Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, it's very difficult still to have any realization, to come anywhere close to the stage of an advancement where one actually understands that Krishna is there looking at us. And one day I will see him there. So I don't find Krishna consciousness so much for myself in being able to understand that through the deity. But when I look at all of your faces and the faces of my dear God brothers and God sister and have relationship with them, then I begin to taste that nectar, that bliss that is coming from Krishna. That's the only way I can actually grasp it. Which is why I love to be in the association of devotees, because I feel Krishna around me, embracing me. So I want to make an official thank you, first of all, to Maharaj, who's embraced me and invited me to come and said to me, stay as long as you want. This unending trust, I don't know where he gets it from, but I hope that I can prove its value. Thank you, Maharaj, very much, from the bottom of my heart. And I thank so much my dear God brother and God sister who tolerated my inability to be of much service in New York in 1971, but still they were very gracious and very friendly to me and were helping me in every way possible to advance in devotional service. And we hope that each of you can embrace the other and keep handing that mango out to whomever you meet, because there's no greater gift to receive in all the three worlds. Thank you very much.
Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda